This Voice of the Arts podcast is made possible thanks to Carnegie Museum of Art. You're listening to The Voice of the Arts, WQED-FM. Jim Cunningham with you, and James Iman, pianist extraordinaire, is here. James has a concert at the St. Paul's Episcopalian Church in Mount Lebanon, Sunday, 4 o'clock. It's the last Sunday in January.
It is the last Sunday in January, yeah.
And it's a beautiful program with music by Ann Boyd. You've just recorded a little bit of Ann Boyd's music for us here. What else is on the concert?
So, Ann Boyd is opening the program. I'll be playing a piece by hers from 1974 called Anklung, which we can talk about. It's got an interesting genesis. I'll be doing excerpts from Samuel Barber's Souvenirs with my duo partner, Kristen Cooper. I'll be playing the middle movement from Donna Martino's Fantasies and Impromptus, which was a work that I recorded a couple years ago and then was just released this past year. And then closing the program with a new work to my repertoire, Ferruccio Busoni's Fantasia After Bach, which is a pretty unusual piece for me to be playing.
Terrific program. And right there, you've given the reason why you should come. But let's back up just a little bit. Why should QEDFM listeners come to this concert?
I take a good amount of pride in my curation of programs, and I think that I've pulled together, with the help of Kristen, a program that shows the breadth of styles that are actually present in 20th century music. Like I mentioned, Ann Boyd's work is from 1974. It's sort of proto-minimalist. It takes four notes from a piece by Debussy and then just creates this gamelan work out of them. The Martino that I'm playing is a serialist work. So he's working with Schoenberg's 12-tone method, his own kind of formulation of it, and is creating not works that sound anything like what you would expect from someone using Schoenberg's method. He really is interpreting 12-tone composition into a romantic prism. So this work, it's the slow movement from the Fantasies and Impromptus, and is set as a theme in variations. But it's a very for me, you know, as someone who spends a lot of time in this kind of music, it's a very melodic form of 12-tone composition. The Barber, I mean, they're just fun, you know. If memory serves, they're from the 1940s, and it's, you know, it's fun ballet music. We're doing the waltz, we're doing the pas de deux, and we're doing the hesitation tango. And then, you know, you add to that something like the Busoni, which is one of his largest works for solo piano. There's this in the Fantasia Contrapunctus that are both heavily indebted to Bach's work. This particular piece is really unusual, not just in my repertoire, but kind of in the repertoire in general. It's a piece that Busoni wrote shortly after the passing of his father, who had introduced him to the music of Bach. And Busoni set up kind of a something of a museum tour of works by Bach that are interspersed with his own original composition. So it's really unique in that it's like it's about 50% his own composition and then 50% quotations from Bach chorales, which is unusual for me to, you know, to reach that far back into music history. But I give myself the pass because it was written in the 20th century. So it's a lot of different examples of what music in the 20th century is.
Your artistic collaborator in The Barber, he was a member of the staff at the church for a while?
Yeah. Kristen Cooper. Yeah, she still attends there. She was.
I wonder if I've met Kristen. Obviously not. I guess. So.
Actually, we were in for
that's right.
Our
you
first
brought
concert.
Her yep. over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now I remember.
We played some Debussy. As
for
a
sure,
of fact.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know it's going to be great. But for those who haven't been to the church, where is it, and is it easy to park there, James?
Yeah. it is in Mount Lebanon. I don't know how easy you would rate the parking. I live in the suburbs, so it's generally pretty easy for me. They do have a parking lot behind the church. So.
And it's free.
And it's free, open to the public.
And
yeah.
It's Sunday afternoon, so traffic Sunday should afternoon. Be fairly light.
We can hope.
So it's part of the music ministry of the church, or how is it?
Yeah,
part of the
it's
series?
Part of their concert series. If memory serves, it's under the title of Friends of Music concert series. They've done this over the years. Had several artists. I've actually played on there a couple of times, and then I think they have a couple more artists this season.
And the church is beautiful.
It is a really nice church. Yeah, it's a great space acoustically. It's very nice.
Have you done things there before?
So I did the duo program with Kristen, and I've attended concerts there. They had Nat 28 as their ensemble in residence for a while, and they have been, as churches in the greater Pittsburgh area go, they've been actually quite good at championing newer music in particular.
Now, you brought me the two CDs. You've reissued one already? It's a
yeah.
reissue?
Yeah. So there was this thing that happened a couple of years ago called the pandemic that we all went through. And I was with my first label, I was scheduled to do a recording in January of 2020, coming out of a concert that I was giving for the Tuesday Musical Club. But for, you know, a few reasons, that recording session ended up being delayed. And so in March, when the pandemic was, I guess you could say, in full swing, or its first full swing, the label that I was assigned to initially, they decided to shutter. It just wasn't feasible for a boutique label, classical label, to be able to stay open. And so, I mean, fortunately, I had time to fix that problem and reached out to a few different labels and ended up getting the attention of the Meteor label. And they contracted me to do three albums, one of which was reissuing the album that I had initially released on the Zed Classics label. And then you have the second album, and then there's a third album that is scheduled to be released later this summer.
Where is Meteor based?
They're out of the UK. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're a subsidiary of the Divine Art Recordings Group.
Anne Boyd, tell me about her music. There's an interesting mystical quality to what she does.
Yeah.
It combines Buddhist thinking and Christian thinking, all kinds of things going on.
Yeah, she's an interesting individual. From what I... With living composers, it's always hard to get very much biographical information. But she grew up in Australia and was just... you know, heavily influenced by the landscape of the outback, and in her mature career, ended up combining a lot of elements of just the spiritual sense of the outback with ideas of Japanese Buddhism. She's heavily influenced by Japanese music, and then also gamelan music from Indonesia. Excuse me. And this particular piece is a product of her fascination with gamelan music, which was a fascination previously of Claude Debussy, of course. And for Anklung, which is the piece that I'll be playing, she actually she takes four notes from one of the pieces from Debussy's Image, and the moon descended upon the temple that was, from Book Two. She takes four notes. And she weaves this very gamelan-esque tapestry by creating all of these small note cell loops. And so there's this constant overlapping of these four notes that are just put in different registers throughout the course of the piece. It's really fascinating. I like to play it first on programs because it really kind of sets the tone. It's pretty subdued, pretty introspective, and just kind of draws listeners in. I'm really into contemporary pieces that do that. I have a couple of other projects lined up that are kind of in that vicinity, just these very reflective contemporary works.
Have you had a chance to meet her yet?
I have not. I have not had a chance to meet her.
It will happen.
We can hope.
I'm sure. Well, that's wonderful. That's so great. Now, I want to hear just a little bit more about the two CDs so that people add them to their collection. They may have missed the first one,
sure.
Album 1, when it came out.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about the second one, because I don't know that we've talked about this so much in detail. You've got,
sure,
DBC Image and Jeremy, Jenny Beck and Donald Martino, who you're representing on your program.
Yeah. So this... both the second CD and the third CD were recorded at the same time through an insane turn of events that is a longer story than I want to burden any listeners with at this point. They were both recorded in the same 4 days in January. It was exhausting. After recording the first album, I took a step back and thought about what I do as a recording artist and as a performing artist more long term. And with my first album, it's intense. You know, it's mostly mid-century serial music, and you know, it's intense for me to play a program that big, and it's also intense for audiences to listen to. And it's really physically and mentally taxing for a performer. So I wanted to sort of soften the edges, I guess, going into any further releases. And, you know, we could probably throw a stone and hit 10 pianists that feel that a lot of their playing is defined by Debussy. I mean, Debussy is one of the most iconic composers for piano, which is no less true for me, you know, despite the music that I play now. So my second album was really kind of a return to some of the music that had been really special to me through college and grad school. And I had never had the chance to perform or record the two books of Image. So that felt like an important priority for me to get on record. And I had been working on Donald Martino's Fantasies and Impromptus for a while, and had programmed them with a couple of different works to kind of test out possible combinations that I thought would be interesting for listeners and interesting for me as a performer. And with, you know, everything that I said about Martino as being more of a really a romantic composer, it felt like an excellent balance to the Debussy Books of Image. And the pieces by Jenny Beck, I mean, if anybody listening is at all familiar with my concerts and any performances that I've given, like the Jenny Beck pieces are some of my most played pieces. They're very, very, they're very dear to me. They're gorgeous. They're for their short duration, I think they're incredibly profound pieces of music. And, you know, those three works combined, I felt, really made an excellent museum of modern music, so to speak.
Essential. Got to have it in your library. Jenny Beck, where does Jenny live now?
She's currently in California.
Mm-hmm. Have you met Jenny?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She actually, she's originally from Indiana, PA, which is where my wife grew up and also where I went to school. So we didn't meet at that time, but I ended up coming across her music. Actually, interestingly, it might have been for my first time visiting here when I did my first program at Chatham of all women composers. I was looking for a piece to play on the radio, and the set of pieces Stand Still Here was recommended to me, and like I've just basically played them constantly since then. So
what else is new with you? You give Friday afternoon musicales at Chatham.
I do that a lot. Yeah. I think I've played that series five times in the years. I've done a few concerts, you know, at Rode F. I've done the Mount Lebanon. So as far as performing, that's what I'm up to. In terms of recording, you know, there's the third album that's coming out. That album is going to have Alban Berg's Piano Sonata, a piece by Betsy Jolas, who's having a bit of a moment right now. So I'm excited about that. Some Morton Feldman, and then a really unusual piece by a composer named Klaus Huber, who's a Swiss composer. And the piece that's on that album is actually another piece that quotes. This time it's coming from Dido's Lament, from Dido and Anais. And then I have, over the course of this entire year, I'll be recording a cycle of pieces by a British composer named Richard Emsley. He has a series of pieces called For Piano, and there are 23 of them total, at least so far. I guess he's still alive, and he's threatened to write more of them. But when that's all said and done, that'll be just shy of about 5 hours. So that's going to occupy me for the better part of this year. Yeah.
Where will you record it?
So I've actually done a lot of work at my home studio to get it into condition to be able to do radio and recording acceptable work. So with something of that scope, I felt that that was probably the smart way to go about it rather than trying to, you know, reserve
an hour by hour for a studio.
Right. Gee. Yeah. Because recording albums gets expensive.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And the capsule summary, I know we talked about your background when you were here last time. You mentioned your Indiana connections, but your teachers, your career, your influences, anything you'd like folks to know about you?
I mean, I grew up in Dayton, PA. Which is a tiny town northeast of here. There are fewer than 600 people that live in my hometown. Stumbled my way to IUP to do 2 degrees in music.
Who was your piano teacher there?
So for my undergraduate degree, I worked with James Staples, who actually recently passed. And then I did my graduate work with Dr. Judith Riddell. And since then, I've done the Summer Institute for Contemporary Performance Practice, where I worked with Stephen Drury. And then actually just this past summer, I was in Italy for 2 weeks as the affiliate pianist for the Cortona Sessions for New Music in Cortona, Italy, which if you, I don't know how often you get over there, and
not
I haven't seen
often.
Much of Italy, but if you get the chance to go to Cortona, it's
spectacular. Would love to go someday, that's for sure.
Put it on your list.
So are you drinking the appropriate coffee and all the pastries and things that go along with Italian culture?
Well, I mean, at the time, for sure, yeah. Everything that they say about the food is just true.
I think it's hard to get a bad meal
in the entire 2 weeks that we were there. I think we had like 2 meals that were at all disappointing, but they were not like in town. Like they were at chain places. So that's kind of what you expect.
What's the big draw in that town? What brings tourists there?
In Cortona? I mean, for me, it was this festival.
Sure.
It's really just the tourism. They don't have a specific industry in Cortona. It's part of Tuscany, so it's got all of the standard Tuscan accoutrement, the gorgeous vistas and the fantastic wine, and of course Tuscany is known for its beef. So the steaks there are just absolutely out of this world.
But on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock in St. Paul's Episcopal Church, you can be taken to another amazing world.
Well, we'll go to Tuscany, as a matter of fact, because Busoni grew up in Tuscany. So,
okay,
fun.
I want to go with you, James. That's for sure. It's such a treat to see you. It's been much too long. And
yeah,
I'm so thrilled that you've got all this good stuff going on.
Well, thanks for having me.
This Voice of the Arts podcast is made possible thanks to Carnegie Museum of Art.